Thank you, Alan. It's all about the water. This is the Great Plains, or part of the Great Plains. What I want you to see there is the temperatures increase very rapidly as you go from north to south. And the rainfall goes from east or from west to east. So there's quite a gradient. The area I'm going to talk about today is this. Southwest Kansas, and then the Oklahoma Panhandle and the Texas High Plains. Now, over the years, we have reduced tillage, went from tillage to stubble mulch tillage, sweep tillage, and gradually moved toward no-till in some areas. This has resulted in quite an increase in soil water storage. This is some work that Baumhart and Unger did out at Bushland. So it shows there that they increased the soil water about 50 to 75 millimeters. And with that, they got an increase in yield of grain sorghum. This is work that Alan Slagle and Stone did at Tribune. And again, it shows that with no-till, they got a steeper slope. So no-till worked, no question about it. So the emphasis over the last 30 or 40 years has been to increase soil water. This shows some of our area. Cropland acres have stayed fairly constant since the Dust Bowl. During the Dust Bowl, the cropland acres dropped quite a bit, but since then it's remained. But the Ogallala Aquifer is decreasing. And so in some of our counties, this is one county just south of Amarillo, you can see the irrigated acres have really, really declined. Now, I'm going to talk about these four areas. I've broken it out in these four because I'm going to show some quick stats, and this is the areas that I could pull up quick stats. So we're going to look at some farmer yields. These data are probably not all that great, but they're USDA quick stats. And this shows the grain sorghum yield since about 1972, showing the southern area that I showed you, and then, do I have a pointer here? Well, the southern, the upper left there is the southern region I wanted to show the grain sorghum. There's been hardly any increase in grain sorghum yields in the last 30 years in that region. Now, as you move to the northern part of the Texas High Plains, there's a slight increase. Then you go to the Oklahoma Panhandle, it's a little bit steeper slope. And then the southwest Kansas is steeper by far. So as you move from south to north, the increase in yields have increased quite a bit. If we look at wheat, somewhat the same picture, except we've got a little bit. But the point is, in the southern region, we have not increased yields very much. It's increased more as we've gone north, because more no-till. Now this is dryland grain sorghum and corn in southwest Kansas. Alan just told me that this year they've got over 100 bushels of corn. The highest one here on the bottom left there is about 90 bushels in 1 year. This shows the average yield of corn and the average yield of grain sorghum over the years in southwest Kansas are almost identical according to quick stats, but there's been more increase in grain sorghum. There's more variability in the corn. Now if we go to irrigation, and compare North Texas High Plains to Southwest Kansas, the yields are identical. I don't have quite the same trend starting in 1972 there for Southwest Kansas. North Texas High Plains started in 1981, but if you look at the last 20 or 30 years, those yields are identical. So it's under irrigation, we can grow just as high yields of corn as Southwest Kansas, but under dry land, we're decidedly less. Now, what I want to do is talk about just dry land, and it's all about the water, so I want to look at the focus here. This is showing the evaporation. This is just showing that as you go from an arid zone to a humid zone, the evapotranspiration component increases. We all know that. And it's only the ET that's going to give us any crop production. We only use about 15 to 30% of our rainfall for transpiration. Sinclair and Weiss says that it takes for an average transpiration environment, it takes about 220 pounds of water to grow a pound of dry matter. And if you've got an arid environment, of course, it's going to take more. If you've got a humid environment, it's going to take less. But keep that number 220, 230. Keep that in your mind as we go through here. Now, the transpiration environment is going to depend on those four factors that we talk about: how hot it is, how sunny it is, how windy it is, and how dry the air is. That determines the vapor pressure deficit. Now, if you measure those at the weather station, you get those numbers. But the plant doesn't respond to the weather station. This shows, I could take these two pictures side by side in West Texas. One's an irrigated field, one's a dry land field. How hot it is, how windy it is, how sunny it is, how dry the air is, they're vastly different between those two. That plant, that dry land is getting all the sunshine, all the wind. It has an entirely different transpiration environment. Dr. Peterson and I have put together a formula that's not too different, but I think it's different from a lot of them that's been. I guarantee you this equation is correct. It is theoretically absolutely correct. It applies to China, it applies to Tribune, Kansas, it applies to Bushland, Texas. It says that the grain yield is equal to the ET times the ratio of the transpiration compared to the total ET times 1 over TR. TR is that 220 or 230 or whatever number that I gave you a while ago. That's going to change depending on the transpiration environment. It's going to depend on the vapor pressure deficit. Times the harvest index. Now, we don't know, we can't measure all those numbers, but we can measure some of them, and then we can calculate the other one. Now, these are all expressed in dry matter. So then we have to calculate back to get it to field weight. Now, that equation is correct. Now, T over ET in most cases is going to be between 0.5 and 0.75. 0.5 for dry land is not all that different. Under the very best irrigation conditions, we may get up there around 0.75. The transpiration ratio, as I told you, is about 220 under somewhat average conditions, and that can vary from 180 to so forth. And the harvest index values are always going to be higher as you go up in your yield, but they're going to be from 0.35 to 0.5, maybe as high as 0.6 in a really good crop. Now, if you increase any one of those numbers by 5%, you're only going to increase yield by 5%, because that's a linear equation. So the only way you're going to increase yield significantly is to increase more than one of those factors. Now, as an example, I'm going to show you going from western Nebraska to Ohio. Go from 20-inch rainfall or 500 millimeters to 1,000 millimeters of rainfall. These are hypothetical numbers that I've just put together from the literature and from my estimates. But as you go from ET is going to increase somewhat with rainfall. So I'm going from 320 to 650. I've just about doubled the ET. But notice the T over ET is going to increase also, because as you go to more thicker spacing, narrow rows, everything, that's going to increase your T over ET. I've estimated the biomass, and I've estimated the harvest index going from west to east. And then if you put all those numbers together, they've got to solve that equation. The point I want to make here is, you see, as you increase rainfall, you're increasing every one of those factors in the positive direction. So we double our rainfall, we quadruple our yield, because we've increased the T over ET, we've decreased our transpiration requirement. Now, let's apply this to some real data. This is a ET, seasonal ET versus grain yield that I put together a number of years ago with Dr. Steiner. You've all seen equations or data like this. Now, if I put my numbers in there, if I estimate numbers to go in there, the T over ET would be 0.6, the transpiration efficiency 251, harvest index, and we come down here, these change. But that equation applies every one of those points if you look as those factors change. This is Nebraska data. Cashman and co-workers. Again, if you look here at apply that equation, if you have a T over ET of 0.55, a transpiration ratio of 240, and a harvest index of 0.46, that will solve the equation at that point. If you go up to the midpoint, if you look at the very best yield that they've ever gotten for a certain amount of water, the upper bound, that would be the optimum. And that would require a T over ET of 0.7, very reasonable. A transpiration ratio of 200 on a good humid year. A harvest index of 0.55. That solves the equation. Now, because it is apparent that changing any one of those factors affects all the other factors, it's important that we look at how some of our strategies might change something. Under dry land, we very often reduce plant population. We have to. Sometimes we play around with skip rows. We play with surface. So what I want to do is use that equation and say, what's changing? Let's look at plant population. First thing we do under dry land is reduce plant population. How's that going to change the equation? Now, if we're working with dry land, the ET, we can't change it. The ET is the amount of rainfall we get between the time we plant and the time we harvest, plus the soil water that we take out of the soil. That's our ET. We can't change that. So what happens if we reduce plant population? If we reduce plant population, the T over ET is going to decrease. Because we've got fewer plants, we get less cover. So we're going to have more evaporation compared to... So that's going to decrease. Our 1 over TR, our transpiration ratio, we've got those plants further apart. The vapor pressure deficit is going to be higher. So that's going to decrease. So the only thing that we're going to affect positively is the harvest index. So we're giving up two things in order to increase one thing. Let's look at skip rows. What happens if we use skip rows? The ET, we can't change it. But if we have skip rows, there's a very good chance we're not going to use all the water between those two rows. So that's negative. T over ET, negative. Because we've got more bare soil. The 1 over TR, we might improve that a little bit because we've got twice the population in that planted row. So in the planted row, we've got those plants closer together. We may help that a little bit. So we're decreasing two things. We may be slightly increasing one thing, but we're going to increase harvest index. So again, that's not a really good win-win situation. But some years it works. But if you look at the math on it, you're bucking odds. Mulch. We talked about mulch. Now this is a winner. This is a winner because we may get more ET to begin with. We may have more soil water. But once we start, we can't change that. But with the no-till, then we can go ahead and deplete our soil water, and we've helped the T over ET. The 1 over TR, we probably haven't changed a whole lot. The harvest index, we're going to help. So this is a winner. The problem is, we don't have enough straw, especially down in our area. And in some of the international countries or foreign countries, we don't have enough straw. This is a reason. My experience has said as we go from the south to the north, we've used more and more no-till. One of the reasons we don't use as much no-till is we've got cattle. A lot of the cattle use the residue. But if we look at this grain sorghum yields again, I think the reason we're seeing that, as I've shown you earlier, is because we've increased that mulch. Now, a rather novel approach that we've been playing around with, and some of them in Kansas have been doing, Lucas Hogg, and is using clumps. How does clumps fit into this? We can keep our clumps a little bit closer together than the skip row, so we can use the ET. The T over ET, not so good. Because the T over ET, 10 minutes, T over ET, we've got a little bit more bare ground there. And that's the reason we would like to use straw with the clumps. The 1 over TR, we think we can help that a little bit by the microclimate. We think we're changing the microclimate a little bit in these clumps. Is it going to increase yields a whole bunch? No. But it doesn't add anything to the input cost. None. One of my students is working with thermal leaf temperature. He's showing a little bit cooler temperatures of the leaves with the clumps. We think we're changing the microclimate a little bit. This is where I think we need to emphasize a little bit more, especially in our area, is forage. If we go to forage, the equation still works. But now with forage, we can keep our plant population higher. And if we keep our plant population higher, then we get more canopy, so our T over ET is improved. Our plants are closer together, so our transpiration ratio is going to be increased a little bit, or decreased. It's going to be a little bit more favorable. And then our harvest index, we don't have to worry about. Harvest index becomes almost one because we're harvesting forage in place of grain. Now, it blows my mind, literally, what we're doing now with precision. When I get on a tractor with a farmer and he's got a 30-foot piece of equipment and he says we're 2 inches off, you know, it just blows my mind. But I think there's something we need to start thinking about. I'm not saying it's going to work. I think we need to think about it. We're playing around a little bit with clumps by putting fertilizer in a clump as well as putting the plants in a clump, because we think that could really increase the fertilizer use efficiency. I've been working some with a farmer up in northeastern Colorado. I don't know whether he's ever going to get this built or not, but he's thinking. He's thinking about planting wheat in twin rows, 4 inches apart, and putting fertilizer in between those two rows, and then having a skip and another. And use the same planter to plant grains, or plant grain sorghum, or to plant corn. And he would put corn in alternate rows to end up with clumps, and put the fertilizer with the clump. He's applied for a patent. I don't understand all he's doing there, and whether he ever gets this built, I don't know. But he's thinking. And most good equipment comes out of farmer shops. They don't come out of John Deere. What about climate change? Is it happening? Are we causing it? Can we do anything about it? These are controversial questions, especially where I live. Our governor says. This is what's happened in Texas High Plains for the last 100 years. Again, how accurate that is, I'm not here to say, but when I put this data together, the thing that really surprised me was that we are hotter today than we were during the Dust Bowl. That really surprised me. Rainfall is not going down very much, but T over E, or the transpiration environment, you know, when you've got decreasing rainfall and increasing temperature, that's not a good combination. It's all about the water. While it's clear that reducing tillage and leaving more crop residues have resulted in increased yields, the gains have been relatively small, especially down in our area. We only use about 25%, my estimates based on research. We only use about 25% of our water for transpiration. We've got to continue. There's no home runs to be hit in dry land. I've said many times, if we start talking about dry land and we talk for more than 20 minutes, we end up talking about irrigation. So I'm going to shut up right now. We're not going to talk about irrigation.